The first thing I thought was real interesting is the section after what we're going to study today that Jesus talked about, do not worry. The parable we're going to study about is this man that was focused on earthly things that he had accumulated. And then right after this parable, Jesus tells us not to worry about things. So I found that very interesting. So, Susan, would you read verse 13 and Susan Dunbar? Verse 13 and 14.
Then one from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." And he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?"
So Jesus is asked to intervene in a family squabble. And normally, you would, in that day and time, you would ask a rabbi to do this. And it was interesting that Jesus refused to be brought into this dispute. Jesus was not going to let himself be, sidetracked from his mission. And this is something that was dividing a family. We don't know if this was property. I guess we can assume that since that's what Jesus wound up talking about. Some disputes over money destroy relationships, so Jesus tells a parable that explains the danger of focusing on wealth. I want to take a minute and ask you, have y'all ever seen a family where both the parents died and people you thought wouldn't have a problem had a problem? I was very close to a family several years ago. And the father had died young, and then the mother died. And if you would have asked me, I would have said without a doubt, when they have to divide things up, that is the one family that would not have had a problem. But as it turned out, they did. I was totally shocked. So you probably all know of certain situations like that where it causes problems. In verse 15 said, and he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." So what is the first, what is Jesus' first warning that caused a problem in this family? In verse 15.
Greed.
And I was looking at covetousness also, which I think that's what the same thing. So Jesus warned against it. Through all ages, this is a problem. It's a problem with every generation.
You know, I find it interesting, Sandra, that he said every form of greed. Now, in this man's instance, we see it as a love of and a pursuit of gaining riches. He's sitting there. There are Pharisees and Jews sitting there. They have greed also that he has taught them before. Every point, it doesn't have to be riches, but in this young man it was. But they wanted power and the praise of men.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's every form, you know, of greed. And of course, then he tells the story about the guy with the riches. I also found it interesting that this young man is like so many of the Jews of the day, that they misunderstood Jesus' mission. They didn't. They just thought he was a great teacher, you know, rabbi type thing. And they didn't. They weren't interested as he was kind of spiritual things. They're looking to Jesus as a physical, wise person, maybe, you know, to tell them what's right and what's wrong. But they're not looking to him for. And that's why Jesus says, "Why are you looking to me to be a judge or am I judge?"
Yes. Okay, then I ask you, what's your definition? Not your definition, but I ask you to define covetousness. What did y'all find?
Excessive desire for more than one needs or deserves.
Yes. The excessiveness is where the problem is.
It's usually for something that a desire for something that someone else has.
Yeah, very often it is.
Yeah, like I want this, you know.
advise it.
I wish I had this.
Invited that the desire to have more always in the bad sense.
Yeah. Always what?
In a bad sense.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with wanting more. You can, you know, we all can think of something else we would like to have, or we may want a new car, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it's when that desire turns us into a not good for God.
So the word covet is always used in a bad sense?
The word that that defines it, you know, the number that was there, I looked up and defined it, that's what it said. Fair is just a greedy desire to have more. Mm-hmm. And then vines is defined it as a desire to have more, always in a bad sense. So in that particular word, I'm not saying every time that word.
So when somebody says, I covet your prayers?
Well, not every time that word is translated covet, is this particular word. So
I'm just asking because I know somebody that says that all the time, and it bothers me because to me, covetousness and covet carry a bad. I wouldn't either.
I mean, no. I don't. I know that person and what they're meaning.
No, but I just think it. I just think it's not a good use of the word. I don't think they'll use. There's another word they should be using.
Who did somebody here post to you?
I did.
But you know, it's the love of and the desire that over all else, no matter who it hurts, this, I mean, he's talking about his family instead of settling it, you know, he's taking his brother to court. So
it's what I want, and what no matter what you want,
exactly,
whatever, however it affects you,
no matter how you're
good, bad, or ugly.
Well, even Bears, when Bears define it, that greedy desire to have more, greed is never good.
No.
I don't know that any way you could use the word greed in a good sense.
Back to Lauren's first comment, and Pat mentioned that somebody gets a new car, and maybe you covet that. Maybe somebody gets a new house. Maybe it's something a lot less expensive than a car or a house. A lot of times, I think it is what you said. I think somebody has something, and we want it really bad.
I guess also the question I would have is going on top of what Lauren said, is it always a material condition?
Yeah.
Is it not always, could it be pregnancy prayers?
Good point.
Because of that material.
We're going to see in just a minute, it's also associated with idolatry in the Bible.
Yes.
Let's see. In verse 16, we haven't read that. Can't read verse 16 through 21.
And he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man was very productive, and he began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? Then he said, this is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, so, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now he will own what you have prepared. So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God.
Okay. So one thing we see in verse 16, this man's sin is he's not an extortioner. He did not get his wealth by illegal means. That's not what his sin is. God does the blessing. We know Abraham was rich, Job was rich, and Solomon. And so that's not the sin. In Scripture, covetousness is talks about excessive and inordinate desire to selfishly possess the oneself. It is greedily wanting something in ways that contradict righteousness. It may go, but that means it may go against God's will. It goes against what we know to be right. In Exodus 20 and 17, covetousness is a sin. That's the Ten Commandments. That's also repeated in Deuteronomy 5:21. Look, turn to Romans 13:9. Romans
you say Romans what?
Romans 13, 9. Nadine, would you read that?
For this you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, it is summed up in this saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself.
Again, we studied a whole series of lessons on you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Look at verse 8. Owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. So this is this has to do with the law of love. In verse 10, love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. If we covet something so much that it causes us to be involved in sin, that violates all the scriptures in Romans. Covetousness is identified with idolatry. Turn to Ephesians 5. We looked at part of this last week. Paul says, be imitators of God as dear children and walk in love in verse 2. Verse 3, let's see. Amy, would you read verse 3 and verse 5?
Chapter 5?
Yes.
But immorality or any injury or greed must not be seen in love you as is proper for the saints. And 5?
Yes.
For this you know with certainty that no moral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has inherited.
So in verse 3, Paul says, covetousness should not even be named among you. And then in verse 5, we see that it's associated. It says, nor covetousness, man, who is an idolater. This is Paul talking. And if this is part of our law, we have no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. And look at Colossians 3:5. We looked at this last week. Susan Hendricks, would you read verse 5?
Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry.
Well, this is a chapter that over and over it talks about seeking and setting your mind and putting on the right things and putting off the wrong things. So these are some scriptures we see that we do not want to be covetousness. It can cause a lot of problems. So Jesus tells the parable, number 3, Jesus tells the parable that shows the danger of what verse 18 and 19.
One of the things was the wrong view of life. He said he had a view of life that the possessions was his, was what was important. He thought about it. He planned, if I will do this and I will do that. It's everything he thought about, everything he did, and everything he gloried in. And so that's idolatry. But Jesus is warning that this view of life that's talked about in James 4, this self-adoration and this putting the trust in riches and having his possessions to be the main focus of his life. Jesus is warning that.
And everything you say describes selfishness. That was his view. He had a selfish focus as a result of his fortune. His plan was to store his abundant resources for himself, as though his assets were his alone and should be hoarded. Instead of hoarding them, he could have shared them.
Well, he also put his possessions above his soul.
Yes.
He wasn't thinking ahead. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't focusing on God and his relationship with God. He was dependent on himself, and that makes us not think about, that makes us not depend on God when we become all wrapped up in our belongings and what we have or what we don't have.
And along the same line, what betrays this man's sin in verse 17 and 19? His speech reveals, as Linda has mentioned, reveals his character. His character was that he was selfish. Six times he uses the pronoun I and says nothing, like Lauren said, about anybody else. His covetous love of possessions is shown by the word mine. I am mine. And mine was used five times. We're not going to turn there since we started late, but do you remember the story of David and Abigail? David sent his messengers to talk to Nabal to get some supplies. And Nabal's response was in verse 11, 1 Samuel 25:11, shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men who come from I do not know where? We're told that Nabal was rich. We're also told that he was harsh and evil. It would have been nothing for him to share his goods with David and his men. And we know the outcome that almost was. It could have been annihilation. So back to Luke. In his speech to his soul, he asserts his trust in his abundance, his guarantee of many years, he thought, of a happy life. But in the long run, it didn't guarantee one single day. Number five. What is Jesus condemning?
But materialism.
Materialism.
And not being rich for God. Verse 9. Like you said, you know, people can be rich and have this world's goods. Paul addresses in Timothy about toward a rich man, you know, that not long about riches, but what you do to your riches, not put your hope in that, but in God, and to share, like I'm sure, you know, talked about, maybe recover. But he talks about storing up treasure in heaven instead of on earth, and so that you can, you know, but these riches, you share, and you help the needy, and you do these things, but not being rich toward God with your possessions, not just money. But everything that, you know, God's blessed you with, you help others.
Yeah. Somebody said yes.
In 2 Peter 2:14, it's talking about having a heart trained in greed, you know, as one of the sins. Mm-hmm. And we need to start, you know, teaching our children while they're young. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that is by being the example that they need to follow. You know, not being greedy, being able to share. You know, it doesn't have to be money. It can be time, yeah, or possession, you know, possessions, whatever, mm-hmm, to be willing to share.
Yeah. Yes. All children, we've seen it. They have to learn, like Elizabeth is saying. They're not born knowing how to share. They have, you have two brothers or a brother and sister. They have to learn how to share. And to them, it's a big thing if they're not in the mood to share that day. But they have to learn it, like Elizabeth said.
It's scary, in a way, that your heart can be trained to grieve.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah.
I think it's one of Satan's greatest tools, mm-hmm, that he uses, even among Christians. We get so caught up in materialism and in things that, and the time that it takes and the time that it takes to plan for that or to take care of things, as Steve has often said in the pulpit, that it takes away from being rich and doing good work, you know. And we can all fall into that trap.
Okay, I had focused on self and everything that y'all been saying. He forgot God and the spiritual side of himself. In verse 20, God's judgment on his selfishness is clear. He was covetous, he was prideful, and he was selfish. And what did he have for the next life? Nothing. Because he did not take care of that part of his life. He wasn't going to take his grain with him. What he owned was no longer of any value after he died. In a single day, the rich man became poor. All earthly wealth is temporary and ultimately worthless once we're gone. We have to remember that. Let's look at Matthew 6. I think we've talked about this. Linda, read verse 19 through 21, Matthew 6.
Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in to steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there is your heart also. And then, if you know, you asked me to read that, but down in verse 24, I think it gets to the crux also. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, which we don't like to think about, you know, us actually hating God. He will be devoted to one and despise the other. We cannot serve God and wealth.
You know what verse 24 reminds me of? How many times in this morning class have we talked about there are people that actually say they want to get as close to the line as they possibly can. And they're already in trouble when you have that kind of thinking. I love verse 21. Every time you hear it in a sermon or a Bible class, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And the reverse, which is the same thing, I think. Where my heart is, that's where my treasure is going to be. Where is my heart? Is it where it needs to be? And we started out the parables talking about the heart and having the right kind of heart.
And I think it's very interesting, Sandra, in this reading, right there between 21 and 24, he talks about mental honesty. We got to look at ourselves correctly, and we need, you know, we need to look at ourselves.
It's hard.
And look at our heart. What are we serving here? You know, but we can allow our eyes to be darkened, and it's not just these Pharisees and stuff that he's teaching, you know, and preaching to, and these Jews, you know, that they weren't seeing themselves for what they were, but we can not see ourselves.
Yeah. Let's turn to 1 Timothy. Chapter 6. Lauren, would you read verse 6 through 10?
Now godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness, and pierced themselves through with many sorrows.
So, Paul's talking about the love of money. In verse 9, he talks about all the things. If you have a love of money, that's going to be your priority. That's going to be, like this man, the uppermost thing in your mind. Is how can I get more money? And Paul says you can fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful lusts. What did God call this man? that we haven't talked about yet. He called him a fool. Destruction and seditions. Paul says the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And he says some are strayed from the faith because of their greediness.
Right here in his parable, we saw that he was at animosity towards his brother, and he's trying to get satisfaction from outside court. About, you know, there wasn't a good deal of love where he could go and, you know, talk to them evidently and settle this. So, you know, jealousy or whatever, you know, the greed is going to cause. That's what usually happens.
Okay.
And hard feelings. You mentioned the families that people die and everything like that. I tell you what, you know, if it hadn't been in your family, you're very lucky. But if it is in your family, you need to just let it go and just know that they're things and that you're not going to take those to heaven when you go, or, you know, and if they're acting ugly or if they, show greed and cause strife in the family, they're not going to have them in hell either. You know? And so we need to just not dwell on that and go on.
Anybody else?
Further down in that chapter, in verse 17 through 19, instruct those who are. Do you already have that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. Storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. And we don't have to think of rich as a lot of money. I mean, we're all rich in here.
Yeah, compared to other countries.
And we all have time to share and do good works.
Exactly. And that's what we need to keep uppermost, instead of love of money or gathering these worldly goods. Sally had a comment.
In verse 22, after Jesus talks about this man that didn't share his money, his conclusion is, he said unto his disciples, therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat, neither for the body, what you shall put on. That life is more than meat, and the body is more than raiment. And then consider the raiment and on. But I think that was interesting that this is Jesus' concept of what that dwelled on.
Mm-hmm. He goes right into the discussion on not worrying.
And it's not mentioned in gold, it's food, clothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, drink.
Everything else will take care of itself.
That's what Jesus is going to do. Don't even worry about that.
This man did not say there is no God, but his actions show that he thought like someone who says there is no God. Look at Psalm 14. His folly was shown in ways where he hoarded his goods instead of using them for other people. His ownership of goods deceived him into thinking that he owned time. But he didn't own any time because he died that day. And we talked about how death scatters. Once we die, our possessions are gone. They go to somebody else, or go in the garbage, or we've just been through that with Doug's parents. They had nice things that were important to them, and a lot of them, I'm glad they had them, I'm glad they enjoyed them, but they're gone, and a lot of it went in the garbage. And so that's true in all of us. Let's look at just a couple of verses. Turn to Psalms 39. Carol, would you read verse 4 through 6?
Lord, make me know my end and what is the extent of my days. Let me know how transient I am. Behold, you have made my days as handbreadth, and my lifetime is nothing in your sight. Surely every man at his best is a mere breath. Surely every man walks about as a phantom. Surely they make an uproar for nothing. He amasses riches and does not know who will gather them.
So, anyone that heaps up riches, and once they're gone, who knows, like we just said, who will gather them? And in Peter talked about our life being a vapor. We're just here for a very short time. Look at James 4:13-15.
What verse?
James 4. Sally, would you read 13-15?
Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that.
Okay, I see I had the wrong apostle. That wasn't Peter, that was James that said that. So in verse 21, to be rich in character is to be rich towards God. We talked about this some. People that have the idea that they're going to covet wealth and hoard it to themselves and not share it, they're foolish. That's what God called this man. Those who vote into securing earthly wealth and who forget God are not rich towards God. Being rich towards God involves heavenly treasures. We've talked about this. We have spiritual blessings from God which mark the welfare of our soul. Spiritual riches are determined by our relationship with God. The wealth is found in harmony with God's will as He directs our hearts concerning spiritual things. It will include faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, etc., the fruit of the Spirit. If we have those things in our life, that's how we become spiritually rich. And we've talked several times about the next passage. Look at Luke 12, the end of both of those. Well, we don't need to look it up, we can all quote it. Seek ye first his kingdom and all these things will be added to you. So, any other comments on this?
God in Ecclesiastes talks about life under the sun. In chapter 5, that's what he also, he again reminds man you come into this world with nothing, you're going to leave this world without anything. But then he says in verse 19 of chapter 5, as for every man whom God has given riches and wealth, he has also appointed him to eat from him and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. For this is the gift of God. It's not wrong to be rich. It's not wrong to enjoy. But what is wrong is putting the wrong priority on it. And to have that as your God instead of being thankful and using the blessings that God has given us. So it's with the knowledge that we're going to die and we're not going to take this.
And like we read, along with what Linda's saying, not wrong, it's not wrong to have a bank account. It's not wrong to save for the future. What's wrong is, what is our attitude about it? And what do we have to neglect to have the amount of savings that we think we ought to have?
Sandra, there was a lot of rich people that God blessed, very rich. Abraham, David, Jacob, Israel, he was a wealthy man. I mean, he wasn't at one point when there was famine in the land, but I mean, he had been a wealthy man. He still had possessions. He had enough stuff to send gifts to get what he didn't have everything he needed, but he had enough money to pay for what he needed. So Linda's wife, there's nothing wrong with being rich. It's the attitude. Jacob was a very giving man, evidently. Abraham, strangers came in, he fed them. So that's the attitude behind it. Another thing I thought about is a good contrast to this man is Job. Job, God had blessed him with riches. But when God took them away, it wasn't because God didn't take them away because he was selfish with them. Mm-hmm. He evidently was very good to people. He talked about the widow and the orphan that he helped. He was arguing with God about why did you do this to me? And yet, even though God took all that away, he maintained his faith in God. It got low at times, but he still depended on God and knew that he had not done what his peers were accusing him of. And so this man, he didn't care. He just thought of himself. And God knew that he took them away, took the possessions away, but it wasn't doing any good. And it's interesting, he didn't say your life is required of you. Your soul is required of you instead. But it costs you the soul.
Anybody else? Okay. That's everything I have.